This is an abridged version of the Teacher Education for All podcast series. The Teacher Education for All project was initiated by the Faculty of Education at the University of British Columbia as a part of a research study looking into SOGI, or sexual orientation and gender identity inclusion, in Bachelor of Education curriculum. A series of interviews was conducted with faculty and staff involved in the teacher education program at the University of British Columbia, and these excerpts are from that study. Dr. Lori McIntosh and Dr. Kedrick James discovered that SOGI inclusion in curriculum was of less overall significance than opening people up to casual conversations and informal dialogue, which allowed people to express various aspects of their identity. These occurred during teachable moments when the dialogue could shift from content-based discussion, which Shauna Faber describes as
teachable moments. Mm-hmm. And so if students bring up an issue or it leads to an issue, then I go off script all the time.
And Derek Gladwin called
a place where we can jump in and start to discuss SOGI issues
as a way of fostering personal connection to subject matter and subjectivities in the classroom. Through gaps in structured curriculum, classrooms can adopt a less formal approach to sharing and forming relational bonds. These
spaces allow kids to be who they are.
As Lori McIntosh states, express the art of teaching, which is to utilize pauses and spaces in the curriculum to make all students and staff more SOGI aware. According to Dr. Lisa Lotzenheiser, it is the teacher's professional responsibility.
From my point of view, critical to actually start talking to the students, whether they're 6 or they're 16, yeah. So that they're the ones that can help guide us in relationship to how it happens.
And so they can guide us to places where sexual orientation and gender identity can be recognized and supported. And it's only possible when we
offer them the opportunity to have the conversations, the difficult, scary, uncomfortable conversations around sexual orientation and gender identity.
By allowing this slippage in on-script time, teachers and students have the ability to create an inclusive environment for their learning. Dr. Annette Henry tells us,
I think as a teacher, you have to believe in what you're doing. But I also think that if we believe in equity, and if we really believe in justice, at some point we have to say, this is what I believe, and this is what I'm going to teach, because at some level, teaching is very political.
Only through experience can teacher candidates begin to clearly imagine how to develop their own inclusive classroom space and model that kind of behavior. This necessitates SOGI discussions becoming part of
the regular discourse of a course. That, I think, is our objective. And you won't find that in a curriculum.
Says Wendy Carr. Dr. Carr, who initiated the Teacher Education for All project, says that such conversations are fundamental to all inclusive education strategies. And this notion, for Steve Mulligan, is ingrained in the careful use of terminology such as SOGI, a term he likes.
Because everyone has a sexual orientation and everyone has a gender identity. And so it's intended to be inclusive. It doesn't define a group of people. Rather, it is a conversation.
How we have this conversation depends on the flexibility of teachers to move through these uncharted gaps in planned curriculum and to become confident with not fitting within the binary definition of gender identity. From the student perspective, the locus of personal identity remains constant while their courses, teachers, and locations change. SOGI inclusive education is therefore not to be compartmentalized within formal curriculum, as Dr. Carr states.
We're not looking at people in little boxes.
Instead, the ability to create inclusive spaces becomes a basic competency on the part of teaching professionals. As Dr. Lori McIntosh argues,
it's about giving them the awareness and the skill set to, you know, check their assumptions at the door and create and recognize when they're not creating those spaces, or recognize it when the schools are not spaces that allow kids to be who they are.
We'll now talk a little bit about the role that language plays in developing a more inclusive teacher education program and a more inclusive society overall.
But instead, let's look at this as a set of processes and relationships that shift and change over time, but that we all have a part in sustaining or interrupting. So how are we going to talk about these things?
As Mona Gleason suggests, Dr. Lautzenheiser similarly takes up
to really, really engage with what does it mean to have these conversations above and beyond, you know, queer 101 or trans 101. How do we actually talk about what does it mean? How do we talk about it in classrooms in a way that the specter of fear doesn't rule our professionalism? And so teachers are professionals. And the reminder to all teachers that they're the ones that should be guiding these conversations because they're the professionals in the classroom.
This language-based skill is acquired through practice, as Dr. McIntosh elaborated.
What I try to tell my students is that if you do something enough, it becomes part of the way you think. So if you start from the very beginning to include it in your pedagogy, it becomes your pedagogical style. It becomes part of who you are as a teacher, and it is your curriculum. So you're not having to think about, oh, okay, did I put that in there?
Dr. Leslie Roman shares that
the thing about doing this work is you can mandate legislatively and with ministry policies all you want, but in the end, it comes down to teachers educating themselves and allowing youth with their different differences to help teachers become educated. And so sometimes the best education a teacher gets is a student walking up to them and saying, I don't identify as a boy or girl.
Dr. Marianne McTavish, currently Associate Dean of Teacher Education, reminds us,
part of that is teachers being aware and changing our language too.
Early childhood and elementary
teachers typically, when they address their children, call them boys and girls. So it will, to get their attention, boys or girls, or boys can line up, or girls can line up, or pattern, boy, girl, boy, girl. And we don't really even realize we're doing that. It's an awareness of maybe there are children in there who are exploring gender and identity, and there's no place for them there, so they have to choose between one or the other.
Hence, we are left with what we might call the binary bind. Ingrained language use makes creating safe educational spaces for gender non-binary youth more difficult. Fear on the part of teachers about making errors and saying the wrong thing in their classrooms while having SOGI-related conversations can be preventative to positive change. Dr. Carr reminds us,
you're going to make mistakes, you just are.
Changing our linguistic tendencies requires a good deal of attention and effort, and in turn requires personal motivation. But as Dr. Amy Metcalf argues,
we are the human part of teacher education, and don't we want to be better humans?
To develop a more positive environment and positive relations, we need to address
how we communicate that type of navigational language in the higher education environment, right? So I think of everything I do in that space as modeling to some extent what we are and how we are in higher education.
Dr. Carrie Renwick argues that SOGI education,
it's a matter of actually not necessarily saying what do you want, what do you prefer, but to be able to open up in a way to say it is possible to use alternatives between he and she. Mm-hmm. So that use of language in that sense would be one of the sorts of things that would be of concern.
Dr. Derek Gladwin agrees with the use of
having that inclusion statement on the syllabus, and you know, the Faculty of Education already has it, just bringing that into awareness. And you know, saying that please approach me to about whatever name or pronoun that you know you want to use.
Dr. Metcalf echoed this general incentive to start conversation casually among the students and teachers, saying,
I think what I would do differently is be more explicit about pronouns, you know, how we identify ourselves in our everyday interactions with each other, have that be part of the introduction of the class, you know, just kind of infuse it through all the layers of the class.
Which Dr. Carr elaborated on.
It's the everyday language that we use. It's the everyday examples that we draw, and it's the readings that we refer to. And it's how we, I don't want to use the word normalize because I think that word has actually become co-opted, but it is just a routine part of how we are and who we are.
Dr. Roman drew upon this same transformation as the dependent factor in the success of SOGI inclusive education.
Every movement needs pride. Every identity needs pride. I think of this as, how do we tell students in our class who are discovering their non-conforming gender identities that they too can claim pride in the classroom?
Often, interviewees reflected on their own need to self-educate as scholars and teacher educators.
I have to work on my language because, you know, brought up in this very Western British system, as we call it, and there's always a male, female, he, she. And trying to remove that from my vocabulary and focus on non-gendered words is really difficult, particularly in science.
In this reversion of the typical flows of knowledge, where the teacher becomes the learner and acquiring knowledge from their students, Dr. Scott continues,
Our students are so with it, you know. They get it. They're young. It's like they're inclusive. From what I can see, they choose to become teachers. And so I think many of them already have a very inclusive mind. I learned from them how to be inclusive myself. But I am working on my language.
This reversal of knowledge flow is also apparent in other comments made by the interviewees of the TIFA project. Dr. Kerry Renwick says,
for me, it's around things like not necessarily making use of pronouns of he and she, and that it's a matter of trying to appreciate and learn from students what their preferences are for how they might want to identify.
While Steve Mulligan points out that
sometimes that kind of catalyst for learning a bit more may be coming from some of our pre-service teachers.
But much of this work also depends on supports from within the environment, the kind that the TIFA project was created to provide. Mulligan noted that faculty generally are appreciative of that support for their own learning.
Yeah, I've had many faculty members come to me and say how appreciative they are of the work that TIFA is doing because it has expanded their notion of sexuality and gender and how they need to be integrated into what they're doing with teachers, candidates.
Questions remain, however, regarding how teachers enhance these informal aspects of their curriculum with a SOGI justice-oriented perspective. Work in this area is necessitated partly because governments, certainly in Canada, have mandated as a part of professional teacher activities that teachers become more aware of the need to create safe environments for their students. Rod Brown, a practicum coordinator within the program, notes that
I would say a large number of our school advisors come to this not because they want to be, quote, mentor, but in some ways they want to be the mentee in terms of they are the ones wanting to get new ideas in terms of how to shape their teaching, whether it's the new curriculum, whether it's new stances in terms of things like SOGI.
Making SOGI a key part of teacher education prioritizes creating space not only in classrooms, but in all the settings that teacher educators gather to share ideas, strategies for teaching, and share information. Rod Brown adds that now with the institutional support of TIFA,
we're not telling you this is how you have to do it. We're having the conversation.
Dr. Lautzenheiser asks,
how do we help people think through and understand the systemic and the critical so that they have the opportunity to think about issues like power and privilege in substantive ways that ask them to actually look both at themselves, so look interiorly, but then to look exteriorly to the ways that the system encourages them to function in particular ways.
Answering this can only be done on an individual basis, as there is no overarching solution for oppression. Dr. Henry says,
I want them to understand the whole matrix of oppression.
We need to understand oppression so that we can end it in all of its forms. Henry states,
I work hard at creating a climate where people can feel comfortable and also feel empowered to say, you know, this is one of the most important jobs ever. You're going to be basically empowering kids or destroying them.
Dr. Gladwin reminded us that understanding at this level of abstraction requires an understanding of gender.
Gender is a social construct.
Yes.
And it's a way in which we identify it. It's not necessarily, there's no natural, in other words, right? The sense that there's a natural order to things, there really isn't, right? Mm-hmm. It's been socially constructed. So how do we deconstruct that social construct of nature and naturalness? It's really important for all educators to include awareness, SOGI awareness, in their classes. These are obviously important issues in society, and we need to find space to give them platform in an equitable society.
The processes of renewing our commitment to inclusive language and discourses percolates through informal gaps across the curriculum. SOGI across the curriculum was another topic which we discussed with our interviewees. In which ways should SOGI be included with informal curriculum? Dr. Gladwin speaks to the ways that critical interpretation and SOGI awareness can be integrated through the study of literature, democracy, and environment. And Dr. Sandra Scott maintains that in the natural sciences, there are many opportunities to have gender-related discussions. Dr. Shauna Faber teaches how
to be an anthropologist in their own practice, in their own worlds, and to take a step back and look at what are the things that are happening that we just think are normal and why.
Dr. Renwick sees home economics as playing a central role.
Home economic spaces are often those ones where it's easier to create a safer space for LGBTQ youth, in the sense that you can create a food or a textiles hub that doesn't necessarily play with binary versions of gender.
Dr. Metcalf summarizes her position that
it's not a unit you add on, it's not a make sure to put this before after the practicum kind of question, right? It's like, it just is, right? So we just do it through it.
John Yamamoto, another practicum coordinator in the teacher education program, tells pre-service teachers that
one of the greatest things about being a teacher is you have that autonomy to kind of push the envelope.
Dr. Renwick's approach in the teacher education context is to
push the boundaries about the comfort, in order to try and break down some of those resistances and whatever, but then put it in framework of their professional practice so that they've actually got those as a way to talk back to and to think about what they're doing within their own classrooms.
Dr. Marianne McTavish observed,
we always tell our children, our students, to take more of a critical stance. And so every time something comes up, it's just making the children more aware and more critical of what is there and what media does. I think that can come at a pretty early age.
Forging these relation-building competencies is fundamental to teachers at every educational level and in every discipline. As Dr. Metcalf asks,
isn't concepts of identity, concepts of who we are as humans, part of every teachable subject?
How do we make this a general practice in all classroom discourses? In order for SOGI awareness to be integrated across the curriculum and become a general practice,
it's fundamental to teach kids that gender is on a spectrum,
argues Dr. Roman.
I think of SOGI as having, like other social justice efforts, the ability to luminesce when well integrated into every subject.
These kinds of changes give the rationale to
try and break down some of those resistances.
Yep. As Dr. Renwick states, for ourselves and others to become learning allies for all. Opening curriculum to productive and inclusive conversations is not only an act of belief, but one, Dr. Roman reminds us, that is ultimately about love.
There's a side we don't talk about much, and it's called the politics of social justice as love. If you can create Soji as the possibility of pride and living without fear, you have created an artistic masterpiece in your class.
The implications and limitations of this study of teacher education taught us that one needs buy-in across programs, that a great deal of professional development and education needs to take place, both for those who instruct and for those who are learning in the university context, as well as in public and private educational settings. The outcome, however, of Soji inclusive curriculum and of having informal conversations that engage our Soji awareness is remarkable when we look at how it creates an open and safe space for those who are not identifying on a binary to be included in our educational systems. There's no doubt that this study reflected the impact and visibility of the Teacher Education for All project, which was instrumental in mobilizing this kind of knowledge and making Soji awareness a high priority for the UBC Faculty of Education. As Steve Mulligan observed,
the teacher candidates have been very appreciative. We definitely had an increase this year in the number of trans-identified teacher candidates who've come into the program, and some of them have specifically said that they felt that their gender identity prevented them from becoming a teacher, but when they heard about the TIFA project, they felt more comfortable, and they felt that maybe they could actually pursue a,
that's really nice
a career in teaching, and that there was a place for them to do that.
Change toward a more just society requires situated hopeful efforts and moments of meaningful conversation as much as it requires the legislative motions of national assemblies. Indeed, if this study has anything to say, it requires them even more. Thank you for listening to this abridged version of the Teacher Education for All podcast series at the Faculty of Education in the University of British Columbia.